is episode 326 of the Anarchist News Podcast, a digest and or conversations on anarchist activity, ideas, and comments from the previous week on anarchistnews.org. This is for the week of August 5th through August 11th, 2023, minus one story because I was having problems with the internet. What's new this week? So that's all you have to do? An instructive little tale from lesfleursantiques.noblogs.org. Instructive indeed, the tale of some people and a project that were targeted at the recent Balkan Anarchist Book Fair. For some of us, this is a familiar story. Rumors and accusations with unclear or specious evidence. Check. People who are friendly to your face but talk shit behind your back. Check. Accusations that are entirely out of sync with people's practices and beliefs. Check. Non-combatants threatened with social consequences if they don't go along with the bullying. Check. And so on. This article accurately names politics as what their accusers are doing. That sense of jockeying for power, no matter what it takes, is far too common among anarchists, as well as everyone else. But, of course, we're supposed to know better. Blah. That was, so that's all you have to do. Hashtag sad.
New book, The Anarchibellion, from South Chicago anarchist Black Cross. A new book by Hibachi Lamar on, quote, forces of nature as taught from ancient Egypt. This book fuses anarchism and ancient Egyptian Kemetic knowledge into a unique explanation of how Kemetic knowledge can be applied to our lives today, unquote. Then, the author was violently arrested on charges that are not here noted and is threatened with being imprisoned out of his home state, away from family and friends. Mysterious. Buying the book supports his legal fund.
A call for anarchists' participation in the protest rally in Cologne, Germany, from the Federation of Anarchism, ERA. A protest against the Taliban is planned. This call acknowledges that this protest will not be anarchist, but, quote, although this is not an entirely anti-government action, it is not far from it, unquote. That seems entirely disingenuous. On the other hand, it's okay to go to non-anarchist protests. This seems like one of those calls to, come fuck shit up for us, anarchists, be our cannon fodder. But sometimes there are worse things than being beautiful, beautiful fuckers up of things. Just don't expect the leftists to help with legal support or whatever.
Report from the International Anarchist Meeting in Saint-Imier, Switzerland. From Transnational Institute of Social Ecology. For those of you who would like to see pictures, this is the thread with pictures. Quote, Anarchy 2023, the official name of the meeting, covered the whole city geographically, as many municipal buildings and more were allocated to the event for different purposes. There was a camping area, different spaces for discussions, workshops, information, concerts. There were also open gyms for people who did not want to suffer the cold of camping. At night, the temperature reached 10 degrees. Cis men free accommodation and a nursery. Furthermore, it should be noted that accommodation and workshops were free of charge and food was freely contributed. Unquote. And in the comments, yet again, Wayne cannot resist repeating his same fucking defense of the Ukrainian military, and the rudists respond. It's getting embarrassing, people.
Yubiana Mechyak under threat of eviction from Freedom News UK. Inaccurate title, it seems. An anarchist queer squat has gotten notice of an eviction to go into effect on August 15th. This is a brief history of the squat and what the folks there have done with their time. And they plan to go out with a party. Quote, we decided to throw an eviction festival because we do not want to go quietly or want our last minutes in Machyak to be when we feel powerless. We want to fill the space with laughs and fun, good food and music, pool parties and protests with all the lovely people we already know and new people we are eager to meet. Starting on the 15th of August and lasting until our energies run out, or until we move together into a new occupation story, we invite everyone to join our efforts of joyful militancy. When we stick together, we can spread the seeds of love and resistance around this concrete jungle. Unquote. Squat the world.
Continuing the fight. From Freedom News UK. I'd say this is A News' non-sectarianist story for the week. A history lesson about some Spanish anarchists who fought in the Spanish Civil War and in subsequent wars. Quote, at the end of the Spanish Civil War, around 15,000 Republican refugees escaped to northern Africa. This increased as Vichy France moved undesirable Spaniards to North Africa after the autumn of 1940. Several of these were used as slave labor on projects such as the Trans-Saharan Railway. One of the worst places was the concentration camp at Djelfa, where 386 Spaniards were confined by the middle of 1942. In his memoirs, Augustine talks of many being whisked away in the night to later become instructors or even fighters behind German and Italian lines in Tunisia. Many of them were anarchists who worked with explosives and had been guerrillas in the Spanish Civil War, unquote. More people who are arguing Wayne's point that anarchists have fought in wars? Did anyone doubt that? What is the point of this? Moving on.
Anna Jersis construction symbolically attacked. From athens.indymedia.org, a communique, quote, the Tempe accident, the forest fires, the murder of hundreds of migrants at the borders, see the shipwreck off Pylos, the labor accidents, are some of the events that have taken place. Others have been announced, carried out, and are being launched even more intensely, such as evictions, iron cladding of parks and squares, various squares concerning the metro, etc. Others have been announced, carried out, and are being launched even more intensely, such as evictions, iron cladding of parks and squares, such as Park Dracopolo, following on from Exarchia, various squares concerning the metro, etc., privatizations, curfews for the city's few parks, and of course the eviction of self-managed spaces and the intensifying attack on the people of the struggle. These are the conditions we have to face. Unquote. So, paint was thrown at a company that cemented over an evicted squat.
What happened at the International Anarchist Gathering? From Anon at the Persian website, anarchistan.net, by Nader Tief. Unclear who translated. This is the report back that has the most nuts and bolts information. Whether one trusts the reporting is a different question, as always. But the details are fun for anyone who has organized events and isn't completely traumatized by the experience. Creating and running a small village for a few days is a significant effort. Quote, the organizers of the rally had also agreed with the city authorities that uniformed police forces would not be present in the city during the rally and avoid checking the identification documents of the participants. During the gathering, there was no particular problem in the order of the city, except that among several thousand participants, a few people who did not understand self-imposed order and anarchist responsibility...
Sorry, maybe reread that part.
Yeah.
But I love it.
Okay. During the gathering, there was no particular problem in the order of the city, except that among several thousand participants, a few people who did not understand self-imposed order and anarchist responsibility crossed the train tracks, which caused a complete stop of their movement until 10 o'clock in the morning, Monday, July 24th. It was said that the Swiss railways demanded a heavy fine of 60,000 francs. The organizers also activated some anarchist lawyers to resolve the issue through negotiation. Unquote. There is also some information about a few of the workshops, including one on geography that sounds like it was interesting, and quotes Elisée Reclus. If nothing else, you can find names here of people to look up elsewhere. Valuable addition to the multiple report backs. That was what happened at the International Anarchist Gathering.
Anarchists who don't understand self-imposed order and anarchist responsibility.
It's like, I can't think of a better sentence.
Right? A zine name or a band.
Like, right now, yeah. That's top. Yeah. That's top.
Yeah.
Just real. My new favorite sentence.
Florence, Corsica Social Center, Eviction in Progress, from squat.net. This, on the other hand, is an accurate title. Quote, several dozen anarchists gathered in front of the Florence courthouse where the trial of a 30-year-old Albanian man arrested yesterday during the eviction of the occupied building on Via Ponte di Mezzo in Florence is underway. I put up a banner near the entrance to the courthouse with the words, Florence is not sold but inhabited, fought, and defended. No to evictions. Viale Corsica resists. 10, 100, 1,000 new squats. The protesters explain that they will remain until the end of the trial of the 30-year-old man accused of resisting and injuring an official following some disorder by the anarchists during the eviction of the building, on the roof of which there are still two people since yesterday. Unquote. Links to multiple squats in Florence for the curious.
Another thing that I liked about the one before this, the like distinction between of the uniformed police forces would not be present.
Yeah. But others...
Apparently, we are negotiators, if nothing else.
Yeah.
10 arrested in police operation against anarchist newspaper in Italy. From SecoursRouge.org, apparently translated by Abolition Media. Very brief announcement. Here it is. Quote, The comrades are accused of subversive association for the purposes of terrorism, Article 270 of the Penal Code, and incentive to commit a crime, Article 424 of the Penal Code, aggravated by the object of terrorism with regard to the publication, dissemination, and use of information on terrorism in connection with the publication from 2020 of the internationalist bimonthly anarchist Bezmotivny, as well as to attack the honor and prestige of the President of the Republic and clandestine printing, unquote. Then the address and name of someone to write to. Unclear if he's one of us or an official, though.
Montreal International Anarchist Theater Fest, seeking plays for 2024 season, from Anon. Call for submissions to the 17th anniversary of this festival. Pretty open re-content, language, format, from anarchist or non-anarchist writers. So there's a big umbrella. There's a list of what they do and don't provide, which is helpful, and an email address for your applying pleasure.
August 2023, Kate Sharpley Library Bulletin Online, from katesharpleylibrary.net. You all might know how I am about history, but I will always have room for Kate Sharpley, and this bulletin is more fun than usual. It includes librarian snark in the form of some skepticism of someone's scholarship, and all properly footnoted, of course. Quote, Dave Cope is a veteran radical bookseller and part of the Radical Bookselling History Group. He has written an article on anarchist papers, publishing, and bookshops. This is part of his project to write a history of the radical book and book trade from 1780 in Britain. The article is a synthesis based mainly on reading and comparing two books, Albert Meltzer's I Couldn't Paint Golden Angels, 60 Years of Commonplace Life and Anarchist Agitation, 1996, and Rob Ray's A Beautiful Idea, History of the Freedom Press Anarchists, 2018. Cope's article contains many errors, some of which seem to arise when Cope rewrites his source material. Unquote. Dude, I laughed out loud. Librarian snark is very fun. That was Kate Sharpley's Library, August 2023.
Rewriting source material! Sorry. Like, what could be worse from a historian's... Anyway, moving on. Cindy Milstein from Full Stop by Shane Burley. This is perfect. Burley talks about Milstein's definition of anarchism as a political system. What more do you need to know? Okay, maybe you need to know more, but Cindy talking about her liberal books is boring to me. She is a Bookshinite who thinks insurrectionaries are bad anarchists. Moving on.
Obituaries.
The death of our compañero Rafa Sigüenza, a great anarcho-syndicalist. From Anon at cgtaragonlarioja.org. Quote, his petite body was home to an unbreakable fighting spirit with clear, firm, and simple convictions. That is what Raphael, Rafa, for those who enjoyed his companionship and friendship, revealed and transmitted. Someone capable of howling to the four winds his longing for freedom, equality, solidarity, with a calm but thunderous voice, without histrionics. The voice of a man who feels free. An enormous, immense man. Unquote. Oh dear. It's not the size, right? Anyway, folks are sad he's dead.
He made a difference. He did something valuable and important. From Anon at comedy news site chortle.co.uk, A Wake for a Living Anarchist Comic. Quote, friends threw the bash in West London, so the 78-year-old pioneer, who was recently diagnosed with cancer for the second time, could appreciate the compliments pre-mortem. However, he had to leave the show early and miss some of the later tributes, although it was live-streamed. Among the mourners was Alexei Sale, who worked with Alan to plant the seeds of the modern comedy scene by setting up a collective of politically motivated performers called Alternative Cabaret in 1979, with an ethos borrowed from punk and radical theater. Unquote. Living wakes sound like a good idea when you have that kind of warning, speaking of your story from earlier.
The A circled in the name. Bon voyage, Andrea. Quote, Andrea, after all, was a full part of the history of local anti-fascism and anarchism, whose memory he preserved and passed on to us orally. The CNLs were a family of Montfalcon anti-fascists. His grandfather, Edie, Ricardo at the registry office, was a militant anarchist of the fascist era when he was surveilled and sometimes imprisoned. To avoid the cell, on the occasions of symbolic dates such as May Day or visits from important fascist figures, He and other comrades would take refuge inside the Solvay factory structure near the port in the Lacerte area. These hideouts would continue even in the turbulent post-World War II Montfalcon era, where, even with the advent of Allied control, the anti-worker climate of the previous two decades remained. Unquote.
Audio and video, Uncivilized podcast number 32, Radical Anthropology, from Artemis Graham Thoreau, an hour and 22 minutes. Anthropologist wall talker Jamie, early in this talk, calls out the Graeber book Dawn of Everything as an anti-anarchist primitivist and cancel-prone book. He does this with no backup whatsoever, and aligns his argument immediately into a completely unrelated text by a totally different person. He talks about proof of species with, again, all... My writing is not always that great. God damn it.
This is like the antithesis of the librarian snark.
Yeah, there you go. Chisels inarticulate. Ranting. Just rant. Just rant all the time.
Yeah, totally. I'm like, would you like to fail at librarian
snark? Fully. No footnotes involved. Jamie really was aggravating to me. It's not surprising that I get less and less coherent as I go along.
I can't tell that you feel that way.
Yeah, I know. I don't let it out at all. I'm so, stoic about it. Anyway, Jamie talks about proof of theses with, again, all assertion all the time. He is dismissive of whoever disagrees with him as being apologists for civilization, which, of course, is probably true some of the time, but to say it's true of everyone is a they hate us for our freedoms argument. Anyway, he's written a book, so that's cool. He does have a definition for domestication, but it's very materialist and reductive. Can we say Zerzan Light? I think we can, including calling out postmodernism as another mini-boss. Disappointed in Artemis for pushing back hardly at all, we need more examples of friendly social people who know how to and will prod people to make them back up their endless fucking empty assertions. Us cranky, pissed off, snarky fuckers will do it, but these wimps won't talk to us. I didn't even get as far as Nettle, so maybe Artemis was saving it all up for the last half.
Ica Book Fair, 2023. International Week. An International Week of Solidarity with Anarchist Prisoners. From Final Straw Radio, 57 minutes. ACAB, which isn't allowing Little Black Cart to table because of ATASA, is featured on this podcast with one of the organizers about the excitement of a tame, disciplined, non-controversial, all-the-usual-suspects book fair. Anyone want to bet that non-anarchist project PM Press won't have multiple tables? No one? Okay. Super activist workshops, but, maybe those were just the ones that the organizer was excited about. That part ends at 20 minutes in. Then there's a talk with Fern on international solidarity for anarchist prisoners, history of, and need for. Sean Swain is not in the description, but he's here. They're not putting him first in the show anymore. Sneaky.
Quarantine's special, Understanding Anarchy as Queer, from Anon at freya-radio.net, 20 minutes. This is an audio prompt and then a short presentation for a conversation on queerness and anarchy at the St. Imier Convergence. It starts with a fun collage and a good idea I might be stealing from my next anarchist presentation. Celebrating queerness and nonlinearity and understanding queer as what does not work or fit into the system as much or more than who one is attracted to. That was Quarantine's special.
And now, a reading from the Anarchist Library. Anonymous. Anarchy Against Utopia. Most dismissals of anarchy or anarchist ideas come through the belief that for an anarchy to work, perfection is requirement. In other words, people dismiss anarchy because they believe it means utopia. If anything, it is anti-utopia. It is utopia's antithesis. Right now we are living out Plato's dream of the perfect society outlined in the Republic. It's not a perfect society that we are living in, but we are always striving for perfection, whether as individuals or as a society. There are always new technologies being created in order to perfect us as human beings, cosmetic surgeries, life-extending drugs, genetic therapy, etc. and there is always an attempt to recreate or fix this pillar called democracy, an ideology of a perfect society, which is run by majority rule. Once every 4 years in the US, we try to make our republic a little better by choosing someone to rule it. If we are dismissing any utopia, let it be the United States, which is nothing more than a living and failing experiment in perfection. Perfection also means that there is an image of perfect. The struggle to be perfect is nothing more than the struggle for a monoculture of replicated human beings. In perfection, there is no room for the individuality and diversity of wants, needs, desires, and dreams. It seems that the world is nearer and nearer to its goal of being perfect, as the world grows monotonous, culturally and ecologically. Anarchy doesn't have any platform or vision for society. There is no ideal to strive for, no image of what is perfect. We recognize nothing is perfect, not even nature. And it is the imperfections that we embrace because it is the opposite of striving for an external ideal. Imperfection means diversity and beauty. We realize that the type of life we lead, we will not be perfect, and that no matter what type of community we make, it will not be perfect. Whether in a perfect or imperfect society, problems will arise, both large and small. In a perfect society, these problems are all addressed with the same ideal. However, in an imperfect society, they can be dealt with as they really are. Each problem is different, needing a different solution. If one is striving for perfection, then one is moving further and further away from a genuine and authentic human being, an imperfect animal for an imperfect world. We don't want a perfect world, we want a genuine and free world, one which has been realized time and time again by human beings who have accepted the fact that perfection does not exist. We want a world where we are free to experience and embrace our imperfections for our true selves. Anarchy means freedom, and it is only in an imperfect world that we can be free from the ideal of perfection.
Hello everyone, this is the topic of the week discussion for anarchistnews.org website. Today we are me, Vic, Lucio, Vesta, and Madison. Vesta, you're going to read the prompt, right?
Yes, the prompt is in two parts. We start with a poem. And then there is a section titled Mundane Exegesis Fodder for Profane Hecklers. To begin with the poem, the tower, to stand against as if to lean on the existent as a crutch. Opposition, a leaning tower propped up by forced perspective. Transient, beyond repair, all that is solid melts into air. Illusions go up in smoke. Fire cast by a drawn athame. And then moving on to mundane exegesis fodder for profane hecklers. The title alludes to the tower, the tarot card, which symbolizes some of the themes present in the poem. First, the alleged pitfall of total negation, of being against everything and for nothing, of nihilistic contrarianism, said to be countered by prefiguration by utopians who build their own towers. How often and in which ways is the existent bolstered by those who oppose it, by the very act of opposing it? How often is contrarianism a crutch for anarchists who lack a clear set of values or ethics? How is anarchism sometimes based on premises it opposes? Second, the cliched image of a tourist holding up the Tower of Pisa. Forced perspective is the name of this optical illusion, but it also implies ideology. Do anarchists really materially oppose anything, or is it merely an illusion posing for the camera? How are they consciously crafting this illusion, or how are they deluded? If the tower were to crumble, would deluded anarchists caught off guard stumble and fall, or would it merely be the illusion of opposition which dissolves? How do anarchists react when the rug is pulled out from under them, when the things they oppose are no longer there or are transformed beyond recognition? Is an anarchist merely defined in opposition to authority, hierarchy, and government? Do anarchists vanish in a state of anarchy? Can anarchism survive epistemological breaks and societal collapse? Third, the title of the book, All That Is Solid Melts Into Air, The Experience of Modernity, by Marshall Berman, taken from Samuel Moore's 1888 translation of the Communist Manifesto by Karl Marx and Friedrich Engels. Berman uses Goethe's Faust as a literary interpretation of the self-destructive nature of modernity, ideas which are echoed elsewhere in Zygmunt Bauman's work. How is liquid hypermodernity in continuous change challenged by an anarchism which often suffers from anachronisms? Do both technocrats and anarchists share a very modern inflated sense of agency, a Faustian hubris of changing the world for the better? And fourth, a postmodern reading of what it can mean to be at daggers drawn with the existent. While the original sense of the phrase declares open hostility, this reinterpretation points to a dispelling of illusions, or the casting of one's own. The shifting and reorienting of one's perspective, beliefs, will, and intention that is central to chaos magic. For some Wiccan traditions, an athame is a ceremonial dagger which may represent the element of fire and is not intended for stabbing.
Any initial thoughts? I mean, I'd be interested to know, I know some of us know about some of this, like the things that are being alluded to, right? Like the image of the tower and this dagger. And I'd be interested if we could kind of ground the conversation in that before we maybe start talking of examples of anarchist opposition or contrarianism.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel like for listeners who may not be aware, a tarot deck is a deck of playing cards that is similar to the playing cards that are used for most games, but there are four face cards rather than three, and then there is a set of 22 cards that are called the major arcana that are illustrated and have sort of archetypal images that tend to follow a general pattern, though sometimes they vary from deck to deck. And they also follow a sequence that tells a story, and card 16 is called the tower, and it usually depicts a tower being struck by a bolt of lightning and like kings falling out of the tower. So it's a symbol of destruction and ruin and the collapse of what has been built up. The printing press Scarlet Imprint, which focuses on occult topics, actually published a book, which is now out of print, in 2015, called 16, which was 16 and one essays on the image of the tower. And their sort of thesis was that we live in the age of the tower, that there are different forms of collapse happening around us. Mm-hmm. And their question was to ask people from a variety of different magical traditions, like what does it mean to practice magic in a time of collapse? And I've actually been slowly working with some friends on an anarchist tarot, where we have been, rather than just taking one of the like established systems of tarot and just renaming everything to be more politically correct, we're actually designing a new system completely from scratch with our own anarchist numerology and anarchist set of symbols. But for card 16, the tower, we chose to rename it Joy, sort of following that idea that we already live within the tower, and that what is actually more interesting about that card is sort of the concept of joy in the face of death, or a joy that is remaking the world. So I guess as far as prompt 2, which is sort of referring to like the optical illusion of someone taking a photograph in front of the Leaning Tower of Pisa as if they're holding it up, I don't think that the tower is just an illusion that is far off in the background. I think we are inside of the collapsing tower. Mm. Yeah, the questions of how anarchy responds to that, yeah, maybe are good jumping off points, but also like how do we respond with joy in that moment seems maybe more interesting to me than questions about whether anarchism will survive the collapse of the tower.
How was the decision to rename the tower Joy made? Like, why was that decided?
Okay, well, we have another card, Temperance, which is about like the union of opposites that we named Creation Destruction. So we already have like destruction in the deck. Mm-hmm. But also, it seems like such a foundational anarchist principle that it almost didn't really feel like it was meaningful to like give a reference to it as like, it's not like a new like way of framing what like an anarchist mystery or an anarchist like big concept is. Like destruction is our starting point it's what's all around us. It's often already our instinctive response to the things that are trying to oppress us. And so, yeah, not taking it as, like, if this the 22 cards are supposed to tell a story of a journey, like, the tower and the destruction almost comes before card zero, like, which is a fool, or the fool in most tarot decks. Mm-hmm. And it's not even, it's like, that's not even card zero for us. It's like, almost, it's before card zero. It's like the setting which the story happens in.
I mean, it's like linking joy and the tower thing, right? Or the leaning against the tower. Makes me think of, like, it is connected with the way that this these questions are being posed, where it's like, what happens when the tower goes away, you know? Which I, you're kind of saying that's a less interesting question, and I'm hearing that you're understanding that question as asking whether anarchism will survive the collapse. I think I'm kind of hearing it differently in that it's not asking whether it will survive the collapse, but it's just asking, like, what is anarchism without a tower? And is anarchism, or are these oppositional or contrarian like positions? I don't think anarchism is alone in this, mainly just centered around finding meaning and joy in opposing a thing or opposing a bunch of things. And I don't really know how to answer that. I mean, then there's like, it feels like there's also a tension that constantly exists between like the anarchist like creation thing and like growing stuff or helping each other or whatever, that's like less destructive. But it feels like usually, at least for me, it feels like usually it comes back to a more destructive thing. But it is a good point that we are living in destruction. Like, it's not like anarchists are like alone in valuing destruction or something, or opposition.
Well, I think framing it in terms of Bataille's joy in the face of death, like even outside of like specific things to oppose, it's like, the fact of death is a starting point of being alive. Mm-hmm. It's a constant. And so even in the absence of like contrarianism or ideology, we have to figure out how we want to live in relation to inevitably dying. And the ethic with which we approach that question is the same ethic with which we oppose the things that need to be opposed. But it also gives us something that is not just that opposition to hold on to.
What are some things that need to be opposed? Or what is like, what it, well, yeah, I'm like interested in, because you're kind of hinting at things that are meant to be understood in common or something. But like, what are some examples of those things? What are things that are meant to be opposed, or what are, yep, I'm stuck. I was going somewhere with that. My bad. yep.
I mean, I think part of maybe what the prompt is getting at is that a lot of times anarchists are, in chaos magic, there's a concept called an egregore, which is like a thought form that like, or like a group identity that you are feeding energy into by like continually referring to it as like a real thing. But it's like, it's a concept that gains more power the more people act like it's real. And I think that there is a danger of anarchists like, speaking in the abstract about like the list of like the state, capital, etc., you know, like just like assuming that those things like have a real existence on their own and then like giving them additional power. And so I think that there's a way in which we recognize that these things do actually exist and have real effects in our lives, but we are seeking to attack them in ways physical and non-physical, but also to like live our lives denying that they have authority or power over us as much as possible.
I guess that's kind of like the crux of the question in number two, kind of the like, if the things that you oppose are no longer there, then who are you? And so I like the idea that you're bringing up of like, we're doing something different. Like, we're not defining ourselves in opposition. We're actually creating a different way of being, is kind of what I'm hearing you say, or is that different than what you're saying?
Yeah, I am suggesting like, I think the critical question is, who are you? And I'm suggesting some possible pathways of exploration mm-hmm. for that question that are not just what we're opposed to.
Right.
I would suggest like looking at lineage of like ancestors and looking at how one thinks of anarchy as a force in the world and what one's relationship to it are some other starting points, but also one's relationship to death and joy.
And it's interesting to bring up death when in a discussion that is at least tangent to the tarot, because of course there is another tarot card that is death. And in the classic tarot system, the difference between death and the tower is that death is, it's smaller, it's more granular, but it's also universal. It's every moment of transformation that we experience where one thing dies in order to give rise to something else. It's also a very creation destruction sort of card. But the tower is a sudden, disruptive, explosive crumbling of some sort of structure that has been created. It's not a death and a rebirth, it's a death and a desolation.
It also comes after what in most decks is called the devil, and which is given sort of a signification of bondage. So there's this sense that is already familiar to anarchists of like some sort of structure of oppression or bondage being followed by a destruction or a casting down of what was raised up.
And so it's interesting to me to think of the connections between joy in the face of death and joy as a state that we can access even when we're living in the middle of destruction.
The more I think about this question, the more I feel like it's pointed at a specific kind of anarchist, or like at a more like I think the dominant like activist narratives that exist are just alone. They're like they exist kind of solely as things that are in opposition to stuff. Like there isn't much, like, I mean, I guess you could say the same thing about anarchism, but it seems like a lot of the activist stuff just points in some general, like, direction of equality or, like, egalitarian something. But there isn't really a very clear, like, system of values, I guess, or something, or, like, a more clear picture of what that looks like, which is, I think, something that's positive about anarchism. But there is a way that, you know, there's like abolitionist is like a big label that people call themselves now, which is like, which does just exist in opposition to stuff, right? It's like you want to abolish things, but then what is like, what are you actually about other than just abolishing different things or abolishing prison, say, right? Or the, all of that. And I feel like that's true also with a lot of anarchists, but it's not every kind of anarchist that thinks this way.
Yeah, I find it interesting that the first prompt suggests a sort of a strict dichotomy between the nihilistic contrarianism and the utopian prefiguration.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty false dichotomy. I do think etymologically the word anarchist, anarche, is defined by a negative, right? No ruler. But then there is also a force in the world that is anarchy, which is, I see as primordial chaos. There's a great passage in Milton's Paradise Lost where there's actually this like, where like Satan falls from heaven into hell, and then to like reach the place where he's going to like build his kingdom, he has to cross this vast void of eternal anarchy where the elements are all mixed up and like fire, water, earth, and air are all like struggling with one another and like in this constant state of flux and transformation. And so I think that there is also this sort of like primordial chaos that is the force of anarchy in the world. And that you can look at the tower card and like the tower is what was built up by someone. And I don't think that the only alternative to, yeah, I don't think there's a strict dichotomy between negation and building new towers. Like there is also the affirmation of the lightning, the affirmation of the crumbling of the tower and of the earth that the tower is built on and of the worlds that emerge after. The tower is generally followed in most tarot decks by the star. So there's something that emerges out of that moment of chaos, and that chaos itself can also be affirmed as a non-binding, non-tower revaluation of all values.
So I'm trying to translate what you're saying into my personal experience with other people. And like, it's, I can sometimes, and sometimes it's hard because it feels like a bit of a, it's like a different lens that I'm used to looking at things or looking at anarchy even, but it's cool. I like it. It's like making me think differently, which is good. Yeah. I mean, you produce something by being in opposition too, right? Like, it, I mean, makes me think of the insurrectionary thing of like just attacking or trying to have riots or, you know, like trying to whatever, create an insurrectionary moments. Like that in itself, you're creating like a culture, like you're sharing a thing, you're creating a reality while doing that. And it almost feels like you would have to try not to, like, you know, like for that not to happen, you would have to stop yourself from allowing it to.
And I would say that's beyond our control. Like, there's always a new possibilities that are created that are inherently beyond our control if we choose to act.
Can you repeat that? Are inherently what? Under our control or not under our control?
Not under our control, yeah. If we choose to take action and see where those actions have ripple effects.
Well, it kind of makes me think of the fourth thing of the daggers drawn a little bit, what you're saying. Like, they're saying, can you explain a bit? Because y'all probably know about this Wiccan tradition and Athame and not intended for stabbing.
I'm going to preface this by saying that I am not Wiccan, outer circle or initiated. I have been Wicca adjacent for portions of my life. And in what I understand of outer circle, like publicly available Wiccan tradition, is that there are different magical tools used in ritual that corresponds to the four classic elements of earth, air, fire, and water. And the Athame is a dagger. It's, as the prompt says, it's consecrated for ritual use. It's not used for any sort of stabbing, attack, or anything like that. But it is used to delineate space. It's used to cut through energy. And in cutting through energy, you can sever energetic bonds. You can use it to delineate the ritual circle, cutting your ritual space out and apart from the rest of the space around you. That's one way to do it. And I've heard it equated with the element of fire, but I've also heard it equated with the element of air. And in the Tarot suit, the deck of the suit of swords, which corresponds to the suit of spades in a modern playing card deck, is often associated with the element of air as well.
Well, again, it just seems like another false dichotomy, like you can only be at war if you're changing ideas or perspective, or you can, or you're stabbing or being in military, like what did they, I don't know the word that they said in the prompt, but it declares open hostility, and then they're saying that there's a dichotomy of culture change, or like changing the imagination, shifting and reorienting of one's perspectives. I feel like both can exist at the same time and is pretty central to the type of anarchy that I am in and around.
Yeah, I really agree with what you're saying, Madison. Like, I had the most things I wanted to say about this particular prompt, and going off of what Vesta said, like, there is this sort of interchangeability in different systems of whether daggers or swords are fire or air. But going with the more common association of air, this is what conflict and open hostility looks like in the realm of ideas, is attacking illusions. And so I think even in the text itself, like at Daggers Drawn, where they exist in its defenders, false critics, like they are, it's a text, you know, like already in the realm of ideas and communication. Mm. And that's where they're choosing to make that particular attack, but I don't think it's mutually exclusive with physical forms of attack or stabbing either, because sometimes you can critique an idea by through a physical action. But I also, like, I'm also not a Wiccan, and I understand that there are reasons that they have their tradition around, like, not using the blade to cut or stab. And there's actually an interesting passage in Jean Genet's The Criminal Child, where he talks about going to these youth detention facilities and, like, the warden showing him all these knives that he's confiscated from the children that are, like, made out of tin. And he's like, look at this. They wouldn't even cut anything. But Janae is like, no, the more useless it is, like, the stronger it is as a symbol of defiance. And if you take away the knife, you'll find an even duller one to, like, symbolize their continual, like, rebellion. And if you take that one away, they'll, like, keep the knife inside of their heart. Mm. And I want to encourage this. So there is something to, like, the non-operative object being symbolically or magically powerful, But also, I think the most effective symbol of a sharp blade is a sharp blade.
Yep, that seems true.
I love that story from Jean Genet. Like, every time I've heard someone talk about it, it brings tears to my eyes, like the symbol of defiance and the dull.
There's also a line in that Daggers Drawn that's like, the better to sharpen our daggers. So I think there is sort of like two different approaches to like thinking about this. But I think what Janae is saying is basically like, by having a physically dull blade, you're sharpening the dagger, like in the mind.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But also I think you can sharpen the dagger in the mind by sharpening the physical dagger. We actually renamed that suit in our deck Pens to make it more clear that like, this often takes place in the realm of critique and engaging with ideas. And where swords are assigned, like, the symbolism of conflict, there do tend to be, like, a lot of warnings about, like, going to certain extremes or, like, not being critical enough of oneself or being too critical of oneself or being overly critical of everything around you. Mm. But in our face cards, our insurgent of Pens is the assassin or the propagandist by the deed, because it is a form of propaganda, so it is in the realm of communication, but it is also by the deed. But I think the thing in prompt four that's like dispelling illusions is also what I was talking about, like stripping egregores of their power.
Right. There's so many questions to these questions.
Yeah, like, there really are.
I'm like overwhelmed by it, but
yeah, it's like four questions within a question.
As far as prompt three and the question of do technocrats and anarchists share a modern inflated sense of agency, a Faustian hubris of changing the world for the better, I think this is kind of interesting in reference to the devil card being the card that precedes the tower, because the Faustian bargain is the, like a bargain with a devil. And I would say that, yes, like egregores, you could call them devils. Like, I think it's often annoying to have the sort of, like, do you vote, do you not vote conversation, but I often describe it as, like, voting is, like, giving a sacrifice to the egregore of the state. It's less about, like, what material effect does this have or not have in the world, which generally is very little, but it is sort of this, it is in the realm of symbols and ideas and, like, where you're giving energy. So in that sense, like, I think a lot of power structures in society can definitely be described as Faustian bargains. But in terms of whether anarchists do this, I think, again, earlier I was saying, like, if you choose to act, you know that certain effects of that action are beyond your control. So you should never, like, assume that you have full control over the situation. But also you should recognize that in acting you have power and that you are causing effects in the world. And so my response to that prompt is Diane de Prima's Revolutionary Letter, number 46. And as you learn the magic, learn to believe it. Don't be surprised when it works. You undercut your power.
Have you seen that? Like, let's make it like a little bit less broad than this question of how do anarchists react when the rug is pulled out from under them, when the things they oppose are no longer there or are transformed beyond recognition? I can think of it of examples about, you know, people opposing something like having a campaign or something, and then when they win or when it gets taken away, like their whole orientation shifts or will be reactionary to the ideas that supposedly drove them or the beliefs that drove them. How do I say this differently? We imagine people to have values that guide them through each of their experiences, but sometimes people's experiences, like losing something, like losing a campaign, like a forest campaign or like a battle within their city or something like that. And then the values change because the tactics change. And so I thought that the question was kind of interesting in that it's saying like how often, like there is something to people knowing their values and not being in opposition to small things or big things or whatever. Mm-hmm. And so I feel like I'm not wording this well, but so if someone wants to translate what I'm saying and what
they're... It's okay. I have a response to that, which mm-hmm. is that, like, I think that does happen when, like, a struggle is sort of, like, defeated on uh-huh. the sort of intermediate terms that it starts with.
Exactly.
But it also happens when there's, like, a temporary tactical victory or the enemy, like, mm-hmm. draws in a certain sense to, like, pursue a strategy of recuperation, or, like, when the cops don't tear gas the protest.
Exactly.
Like, and the riot, like, continues for a few days and then maybe fizzles out. Whereas in other cities where the cops are brutally repressing demonstrators, like the riots continue for like days and days.
Mm-hmm.
Or like we drive the fascists out of our town and they like start going other places, but then like we're not like redirecting that energy into something else. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, there's sort of like the state isn't always just going by the same exact playbook every time. And like any temporary victories are always like subject to being recuperated by conformity and like mm-hmm. a new form of the continuation of the normal. And yeah, anarchists are not always really good at being prepared for their opponents to sort of like use this sort of like Aikido approach or like brawl energy.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so I think there's something there about like neither victory nor defeat, like mm-hmm. neither hope nor fear, like
mm-hmm.
an ethic that like is able to respond to all circumstances and like keep sight of what it values.
Right. And I think that that's kind of like what I read into like sort of the crux of this question is like, it almost feels like opposition grows from like a strong core of connection with values and joy, like you said, and all of these different things. And like that creates a ballast, which can, you know, find its own equilibrium as the tower falls, sort of like to mix my metaphors. But
yeah, I found the question shortly thereafter in prompt two, do anarchists vanish in a state of anarchy, interesting? Because from my perspective, the answer is no. Anarchy is a force in this world, and anarchy is also a set of values and ethics. And if that's what you live by that regardless of what the state of everything else around you is.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also think that anarchy, even in states of victory, anarchy is something that has to be reaffirmed over and over, lest power structures creep in.
As they always will in some form or another. Like, people will always build their small towers, even if they're relatively easy to knock over compared to the ones that surround us today.
Mm.
And they'll always have. So there's no, like, state of anarchy. Anarchy is a process. Anarchy is always present, and we're not in a state of anarchy now.
Mm.
Yeah.
It just coexists alongside the towers, as it always has.
And I think that considering anarchy an affirmation and a reaffirmation is perhaps an alternate to that dichotomy of contrarianism or prefiguration.
Yeah, I agree with that. This idea of there just like being a state of anarchy in the future is like anarchy as a new tower, which yep. is not how I see it.
How does the concept of revolution fit into this, or does it?
I think revolution can also be an affirmation and a reaffirmation.
Revolution to me first calls up the tarot card of the wheel because it literally means a turning. But in the sense that it's sort of used by the revolutionary traditions the past several hundred years, there is the moment of the tower, which is sort of like this moment of destruction in the story. And then card 20 also draws from sort of messianic traditions because it's the day of judgment. The name of the card is judgment, and it depicts like an angel blowing a trumpet and the dead rising from their graves. And so that could also be seen as a card of a moment of large-scale transformation or liberation, which I think it depends on who you talk to. Some people are very allergic to the word revolution. but I think that, to me, my line on it is the revolution would literally be a miracle, but I also believe that miracles can happen. But I see revolution or insurrection or anarchy as a force and a being that has its own consciousness. And we can make invitations for it to come through the windows that we try to open up, and it can choose whether to respond or not to the offerings that we make. And so that question is not within our control. It's not something that we can make happen, nor is it something that will like happen according to some deterministic like set of historical laws. It has its own consciousness. And so, yeah, I think we can each figure out what name we want to call that force by, or if we want to have a relationship with it and what it looks like, or forces in the plural. But I think that's what we can't do without either over-inflating or under-inflating our sense of agency.
Speaking of agency, and as a bit of a sidebar, what are your preferred offerings to anarchy?
I think anything that opens a window of possibility that usually doesn't exist for greater liberation.
Feels like there's so many things that could be that. Yeah, it feels like the opportunities for that are kind of all over the place all the time, if you look for them enough, whether really big or not. Yeah, I like that. I like all of that.
Yeah, I think approaching looking for those opportunities and recognizing that, like, we have different tools at our disposal. Like, the suits of the tarot are, like, named after objects. And so it's, like, the way that I've been thinking about it is that these are, like, different tools that we have or different methodologies. And so in some cases, the sword might be the right tool. And in other cases, the wand as, like, a torch or fire or like, attack might be the right tool. In some cases, like, the cup or the disc, water or earth, sort of symbolizing care and material infrastructure or support might offer the methodology by which we might open a window. But that, like, depending on any one of them to the exclusion of the others is generally going to be a dead end.
That makes sense. Because then you're, like, forcing it, which is, and it's, you're, like, building a tower to the tactic or whatever, or the methodology. I think the thing that's helped me keep going and feel excited about this stuff for a while is that whenever I feel opposed to a thing, I like ask why. What is the thing that is actually making me upset at something and want to destroy it or whatever? It's not just like just looking at that part of it. It's actually not giving it enough meaning. Like the just being upset at something and feeling opposed to it isn't enough. Like, I actually have to find where it collides with my will to, like, or my desire for my own freedom or something like that, you know, or, like, whatever, like, one of my desires. So I try to come back where the thing is actually feels personal and feels like it's coming out of me moving towards living my values or living a kind of life that feels meaningful to me. And then it's like, it feels worth just trying to do that in itself. But for me, that usually means I run into walls where there's all these things keeping me from living the way that I want to. And so those are the things that then I want to attack or whatever, or do, like you said, redirect in some direction or find a tool to deal with, I guess. But that then means that if that tower comes crumbling, all that happens is my ability to live a meaningful life for myself just expands until I run into another wall. That's like kind of, maybe I'm oversimplifying it, but I do kind of think like this, actually. Like, my knee-jerk thing is like, this thing pisses me off or whatever, and then I start asking myself questions why, or like, what is it actually stopping me from doing, or how is it affecting the people around me that's like upsetting, you know, or like whatever. But yeah, just being opposed and relying on the towers, and makes sense why that would be a brittle position in itself.
Yeah, I think it's important that the card is named the tower, so it's named after the thing that was supposed to be stable and permanent and fixed. But what the card actually depicts is the process of collapse, decay, destruction, which is basically then cast in the sort of like story told by the picture as like what goes up must come down. And so actually, like, there's sort of a story just in that one card, you know, of like, it's named after the fixed object, but what it actually depicts is the process of change and transformation that comes suddenly and unexpectedly. And so, yeah, I think it's in that the sort of some of the anarchist ethic is already present there, or an anarchist ethic.
Yeah, it's interesting to think of all these things in magical terms. I like it. It's like pushing me to, there's some struggle in it for me, but I like it. I think the way that when I do think in that way, it's usually just ways that I make up. Like, I don't really spend that much effort, I guess, learning about the things that y'all
know a lot about. So it's like, I feel like I'm learning when I'm listening. And when I think in this way, it's usually because I find meaning in a thing and I'm like, I write it down. And then I'm like, now this is a magical thing that is like part of my, it's like a tool, a whatever, like a way that I look at stuff now or whatever. And I've gathered some of those, but it is not as accessible to me as other ways of thinking, I think.
Yeah, I think for me, anarchy and magic are actually synonymous. They are both about one's ability to act in the world and collapsing the distinction between the material and the realm of ideas or spirit and seeing that it's actually just one thing. So sort of an enchanted materialism or an embodied spirituality, and that words and symbols and stories and ideas have very powerful effects on material reality, and material reality has very powerful effects on words and symbols and stories and ideas. And that anarchy is something that we feel inside of our bodies and something that we feel outside of our bodies and that we're connected to in certain moments more constantly. And anarchy is also a beautiful idea that is often beautiful precisely because it is simple.
I think that's a good place to leave it if y'all agree, unless anyone has anything else you want to add.
I was going to ask all of you a brief question, and it's what's something small or big that has been bringing you joy in the midst of all of this destruction?
I recently have started feeling differently around animals, which is that I've never felt before, which I think is something I really wanted, but didn't know what it looked or felt like. And that's been really great. I mean, any animal, but like more so wild animals and stuff. Like, I feel like I'm being visited by a friend, and that I can actually feel, it like feels warm. And that's, I mean, I've always liked animals and cared about them and that, but I think having that actual feeling is a pretty new thing to me that has been really nice. And it's feeling more and more difficult to feel alone as I experience that more and more.
I think one of the things that's been bringing me joy is the fact that currently, apparently, you can stop one of those self-driving cars by placing a traffic cone on it.
Yep. That is pretty awesome. Do you have one, Madison?
This is like one of these things where someone asks me a direct question and my mind goes completely blank. And so, no, I don't have an answer to this question at the moment.
I'll maybe combine your two answers and say that the otter that's been stealing surfboards and the orcas that are sinking boats continue to enjoy.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. Well, thank you. Thank you to everyone. This was really nice. And yeah, it just felt very special.
Thank you, Vic. Thank you, Madison.
Yep, thank you both. And thank you to everyone listening.
Go find joy and make offerings to anarchy.
This week's podcast was sound edited. What's New is written by Chisel and read by Chisel and George. Nice to have you back, George. We hope this podcast is useful too and fun for anarchists and the anarcho-curious. And also, Tolgash is grumbling in the background because he really wants to go outside. So I think I have to cut this short. Have a good week, everybody.